The MarketsWiki Open Outcry Traders History Project is brought to you by John Lothian News. The Open Outcry Traders History Project series is modeled after the Veterans History Project. The video series includes traders from all over the world who participated in Open Outcry markets. Today, we have the first video in the series featuring Chicago Mercantile Exchange Chairman Emeritus Leo Melamed. How did you buy your first membership?
My friend called me up and said, quick, take a look at the Tribune. It's Sunday morning, and there's a law firm called Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner, and Beam. And they're looking for runners from 9 to 1 that must be to court. I applied, and of course, being that I was a law student, that, you know, rose to the top of their requirements, and I got the job. And, you know, eventually, like the following morning, I realized we were at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The exchange was then supporting prices. Things were that bad that this capitalist entity had to support prices of memberships. And it was for $3,000. Of course, I didn't have $3,000. So I went by my father, and he came with me to see the place. He was a brilliant guy. He immediately understood the nature of what happens at the Chicago Merc. And he showed me he had $5,000 in his banking account. And he was going to give me $3,000 to buy that membership. Just think about that.
How did the trading pit affect your health?
I lost hearing in my left ear because of the guy on my left in the pork belly pit who was quite a shouter. And I think it did affect hearing to a lot of people. But physically, I didn't have any problems and still don't. They tell me that at my age, I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing, but I have no problem doing it.
How is your family affected by your job?
The impact was serious because my time was limited, very limited. I would come home very late, and the little bit of time I could be with them before I went to sleep, because I got up very early. And I wasn't what one would call a great father. Maybe I was a good idol for them because I worked hard and succeeded. And that's always good to show your children. But I didn't have that much time to really be with them, and that was unfortunate. I did the best I could. On weekends, I gave them the whole weekend always. And we took trips together, driving trips, you know, and through the country and whatnot. But I guess there was a toll.
What style of trader were you?
There was the Ralph Peters style, was to buy a bunch and hang on, or sell a bunch and hang on and stay with it or increase it. I was never that because I never had that kind of money anyway. At the other end of that spectrum were guys that traded the minimal tick, one or two at a time. You know, they buy this and sell this, and they're standing in the pit buying and selling at the same time. I was never any of that. That was arduous and it didn't seem to make a lot of money. So I was somewhere in between. I learned charting from some of the best and read all the books, and I believed in charting. I believe that timing is better found on charts than they are in any other way. I think 40% of my opinion came from fundamentals and 60% came from charting. And I would like the combination of both to tell me the same thing. If both did not tell me the same thing, I tried to stay away from that market. But if the fundamentals were, let's say, bullish, my interpretation, and if the chart showed that it was breaking out into a bullish pattern, those were my markets. And I would start slow, but I would build up a position, and I would stay with that position until the profit took me out, because profit is harder to stay with. Losses you get out quickly. Profits you don't know. It's very hard to get out of a profit when you have to even.
Were you a bear or a bull?
Mostly a bear. Bernard Baruch, who was a great trader, and wrote lots of things. And one of the things he said is it always ends up with the bears because they are the true owners of the of the product. His point was that selling was easier, selling was quicker. When a bear market happens, everybody just saw that in last year, how fast it'll go down. It took months and months and years to go up, and it takes days and days to go down. So there is a huge risk reward by being bearish at the right time, because you sometimes have to sweat out long-term bull markets. The public never went short. The public doesn't know how to go short. The public can't even think short. The public buys first, sells later. And so you knew what events would affect the public, and you could take advantage in terms of knowing what's going to happen next. And bears take advantage of that, and quickly. I was one of them.
What is the longest you've gone without making a trade?
Not a full week. Several years in a row, rent an apartment in New York for the trade in May potatoes. The whole thing was May potatoes. And I didn't have a membership there, but they were loose with that. And it was a great fun to be in New York and trade and so forth. So I did that for a couple of years.
What was the best day trading on the floor?
September 13th, 1969, when after I had been the third time broke, I made all my money back, got out of the market and eggs, went back on the floor when they were sweeping up the floor, you know how they come in, and made everybody look for the date of September 13th. I was going to put it in a frame because I was never going to go broke again. And I didn't. And we found the September 13th, put it in a frame. It's in my office. It's on one of my walls.
What was your worst trade?
The worst trade was when I got caught being short the Swiss franc. The administration had, this guy Blumenthal was Secretary of the Treasury. He couldn't be Secretary of a kids club, but he was. And the world knew that the dollar was going to sink, and it did, but I was short the Swiss francs, and that went bananas, and I couldn't get out, because in those early days, that was a liquidity problem we had, as you know. It wasn't yet mature enough, and this is when the oil embargo happened, and Swiss francs went insane. I couldn't get out for days, and it cost.
What product was the hardest to trade on the floor?
The S&P, that was my nemesis. It was my most difficult contract to trade. I don't consider myself that any good in Standard & Poor's. Everything else I kind of learned, but this was tough.
What is your worst memory of the floor?
I went broke three times, and it wasn't in the currencies, and it wasn't the electronic. It was on the floor with September eggs, where the contract and pork bellies. The liquidity just wasn't there. When you got stuck in positions, you're going to stay stuck for a while. Pork bellies went up the limit 5, 6, 7 days. I was caught. Ended up going broke. But I also had gone broke in trading September eggs, because September eggs were always cornered by the same crowd that always cornered our markets. And I was adamant that I was going to beat the corner. You can't. I lost out. And the third time was just, you know, miscalculating, bad trading. But I vowed never to make those mistakes again. And so in a way, it was a great learning lesson. But those were my worst days in trading.
What was your worst error?
I had a company, Delcher Investment Company, and I had traders that cleared through me. And one trader on a given day took a British pound position, got married to it, and lost $3 million. I had some wealth, but not $3 million. I had to pay before the close at 2 o'clock, as you know, to clear the trades. That was my worst. I financed it, you know. But that was my worst moment.
What dramatic event do you remember from the floor?
So here are pork bellies going up the limit because they're the war in the Middle East, 67 war, and it's going up the limit. And Marlow King, who was my friend and a great trader, ran down from his office, came down to the pit, and it was limit up. And everybody was standing bidding the limit up. You know how that works? And he shouted above the din, "You guys are nuts. Neither the Arabs or the Jews eat pork." He was caught short like I was. It didn't matter. But that's a great incident.
What great deeds did you witness on the floor?
The trading floor was very helpful to people who got into trouble money-wise. And that was because it was like a family. I think it was true at the Board of Trade as well. You took care of people who, you know, for reasons whatever, needed a buck to get started again or cover a loss that they couldn't hold on to.
What life lessons did you learn?
You cannot tell whether a person will make a good trader or not. There really is no way. I could know you, and I can know your personality and so forth and so on, but I don't really know whether you'll make a good trader or not, because there's an element that you can only find out after you've done it and done it a while. It's like baptism of fire, you know? You don't know the person until he's been in the pits and traded with you, and then you get to know him, and then you get to know what he's like. I tried not to get a first impression and let it stay with me when I met someone. Our word was our bond. We never walked away from a losing trade that we know we took. That was true throughout the business. Those traders that were cheats, they left very quickly and couldn't become traders. No one would trade with them. You and I could have made a trade in the fleeting moment as we were passing, and you said, "Done," and that trade could be $200,000 to you. It was like 10 lawyers signed it. You don't care. You know you're going to get the trade in the $200,000. That's an attribute of trading that I admired and have talked about. And it isn't true in all professions. It's true in the trading profession.
What caused you to stop trading on the floor?
Leading the exchange. I mean, the amount of telephone calls and people to see that I had to entertain made it impossible being on the floor. So it was something like 81 or 82 that I permanently moved to the upper, you know, fifth floor of the building with an office and arranged so that I could trade continually as I had before, but I could also meet with people and answer calls and do whatever a chairman has to do.
Thank you for listening to this entry in the Open Outcry Traders History Project from John Lothian News. The Open Outcry Traders History Project and all the history projects from John Lothian News are supported by the readers of the John Lothian Newsletter and others who have contributed to the MarketsWiki Education GoFundMe campaign. For more details on the series, the videos, the podcast, and contributing to the GoFundMe campaign, go to education.johnlothiannews.com.